Banachek,
Bill Hartman,
Lorne Michaels,
Jan Hook,
and Banachek's fans, Okay, folks, it is S3E8 of your boy, Fanacek, on the mic. This is a big one. It's a beautiful spring day today. You're going to hear some lawnmowers in the background because my neighbors love to cut their grass. Clearly more often than I like to cut my grass. But today I'm too busy to cut grass. I'm tackling arguably the biggest subject I've ever tackled on the podcast. And that's Mr. Lorne Michaels. Ever heard of him? I bet you have. And I bet you're thinking, I know Saturday Night Live, and we're going to touch on that. But this dude has done a lot. This guy has quietly become the wealthiest dude in Hollywood. And I'll tell you why here in a little bit. So no chit-chatting, no small talk, no catching up. How's your life going? How's your spring going? Because I don't care. I got to get to this. So let's jump right in on Mr. Lorne Michaels, born November 17th, 1944. He was born Lorne David Lipowitz. Uh-oh, someone's got that Jonah Feldstein disease, right? Jonah Hill, Jonah Feldstein. So yes, Lorne Michaels is Jewish. That has upset some people in the past because he very famously talks about for SNL, he likes to hire a lot of Catholics. And so a lot of Jewish people are like, hey, dickhead, you're actually Jewish, but it is what it is. But he was born Lorne David Lipowitz, but we know him as Lorne Michaels. He is a Canadian American. He's a producer. He's a screenwriter. He's a comedian. He's most famous for bringing us SNL, of course. Now, there are disputes as to where he was born, which is interesting. Some say he was born in Toronto. Some say Israel, and he is an Israeli citizen, by the way. But some also say, who cares? He's a comedy god. The son of a bitch can be born wherever he wants to be born. He grew up, though, in Toronto, in case you were wondering. He began his career as a writer and broadcaster for CBC Radio. The CBC, of course, is the Canadian Broadcasting Company. If you ever watch Schitt's Creek, you see CBC all the time, right? Because that's who made Schitt's Creek. He was doing comedy writing, and that's what brought him to LA in 1968. Think about that, by the way. LA in 1968. What a good time to be in LA, right? Just maybe a year before the Tate murders. Ooh. So he is responsible for some of the most iconic American comedy and comedy shows of the last 50 years. He is in the Television Hall of Fame. He has a star on the Canadian Walk of Fame. He was awarded the Mark Twain Prize for American Humor. He's won a Peabody Award. He's even won some royal shit. Check this out. The Companion of the Order of Canada, Member of the Order of Canada, the Queen's Golden Jubilee Medal, the Queen's Diamond Jubilee Medal, and the USA's very own Presidential Medal of Freedom. He has 98, folks, 98 Emmy nominations, 21 Emmy wins at the time of this recording, and he's the inspiration behind the character of Dr. Evil, right? He is Lorne Michaels, ladies and gentlemen. Let's dive right in. He's got 38 writing credits, 218 producing credits. Let's use SNL as the line of demarcation, right? So first we'll focus on Lorne's pre-SNL career. We'll start there. It all starts with the writing. So his first credit is for a 1968 TV series called Barris and Company. IMDb has no info other than it lasted one episode. It started Guido Basso and Genevieve Buchold. I had to look up Guido Basso. He was a French-Canadian composer, flugelhorn player, and trumpeter. Mm-hmm, sounds interesting. We need a show with a French flugelhorn player. Get me Lorne Michaels, damn it. What do you write? But anyway, that's the show. But the co-host and announcer was an unknown Alex Trebek. How about that? Because Alex Trebek is Canadian as well. So it was obviously a French-Canadian production. And that's really all I know about that show. Lorne's next credit, though, is a little bit cooler. It was 12 1968 episodes of The Beautiful Phyllis Diller Show. Phyllis Diller was a famous comedian and actress. Her shtick was basically that she made fun of how ugly she was. She wasn't that far off, quite frankly, which that sounds like an asshole thing to say, but she wasn't a great looking lady. But I remember her as a kid, she was on Scooby-Doo. You know, there was like that Scooby-Doo meets Frankenstein, Scooby-Doo hangs out with the Harlem Globetrotters, where there was also a Scooby-Doo meets Phyllis Diller, and I remember that as a kid. So it was 1968, only lasted 12 episodes. It was a variety show starring Phyllis Diller, but check out this cast slash guest list, right? Because this is some heavy hitters. Phyllis Diller, Norm Crosby, Rip Taylor, Goldie Hawn, Leonard Nimoy, Cher, Maureen O'Hara, Raymond Raymond Burr. Look at that. Ava Gabor, Ricardo Montalban. Chuck Connors, Eddie Albert. Oh, I like Eddie Albert. He was Green Acres. Green Acres is a place for me. What else? Peter Lawford, huh? He was kind of a Kennedy, wasn't he? Peter Lawford? Kind of a, one of the Kennedys married him. He was a Rat Packer and then got Kennedy married him. Jim Brown was in this. Johnny Carson himself. Sonny Bono, Hugh Hefner, Liberace, Glenn Campbell. I'm not even making this up. Dick Martin from Rowan and Martin's Laugh In, which that'll come up later because Dan Rowan was in this too. Dionne Warwick, before she had all her psychic friends. Sherry Lewis, that's a puppeteer lady with a lamb chop, pork chop, lamb chop, one of those. Sherry Lewis, remember that? Lou Rawls, I can stop. I mean, this is just Vidal Sassoon, the hair guy. Anyway, that is the beautiful Phyllis Diller show. Wow. After this, Lawrence starts writing for the very hip and influential Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In. I told you that show would come back. He was a writer on 13 episodes. Laugh-In was a sketch comedy show. I should actually say Laugh-In was the sketch comedy show. 1967 and 1973 lasted 141 episodes. It was created by and starring Dan Rowan and Dick Martin. Let me pull it up on my trusty IMDb. We'll take a look at some of the cast and actors. Of course, Rowan and Martin, Ruth Buzzy, Gary Owens, Alan Sues, Art Johnson. Who else? Lily Tomlin was a regular. This was also the show that really gave us Goldie Hawn and made her famous. I can go on and on forever. Oh, Richard Dawson. Richard Dawson was on, what the hell show? Hogan's Heroes. Then later on, he was the original. I think he was the original host of Family Feud. He was the creepy one that was always kissing the ladies and shit. Go back and look that up on YouTube. He's like grabbing their boobs and kissing them. I was like, that shit would not fly today. But that's Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In. I made a note to read the first review of Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In because I feel like I could do it better justice than I could. The title of the review is A True Classic. This show was to the 1960s what Your Show of Shows was to the 50s, Saturday Night Live was to the 70s, and In Living Color was to the 90s. It was a breeding ground for some of the finest comic talent of the last nearly 40 years. The catchphrases, the shtick, and most of all, the joke wall were all vital parts of this show. And look at all the alumni, Goldie Hawn, da-di-da-di-da-di-da-di. That's it. It goes on forever, but man, it was a truly influential show. I think it was like the first show of its kind to ever feature a president, too. If I'm not mistaken, Richard Nixon made an appearance, like in an effort to kind of jazz up his image as of being a stick in the mud and kind of a douche. He appeared on Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In, and then he would later, you know, resign from the presidency for "I am not a crook." But anyway, in 1970, Lauren would get his own show. So he graduates from Rowan and Martin, gets his own show. 1970s, the Hart and Lorne Terrific Hour. Oof, sounds like a Korean show, right? Hart and Lorne Terrific Hour. Oh, man, that was racist. Here's the synopsis. Canadian comedy and variety show starring Hart Pomerantz and a pre-Saturday Night Live Lorne Michaels. This thing went on forever. It didn't. It lasted two episodes. So, yeah, his first tryout on his own project did not go so well. But the next one would. So here's a review on this one called Surrealism, eh? That's a knock on Canadians. The jokes in this show were so illogical, they achieved a kind of epic weirdness. There were the ongoing interviews with the beaver on the back of the Canadian nickel, played by a guy in a beaver suit, the Society for the Suppression of Vowels, and then it gives like these names where like there's no vowels and stuff. I was only 11 at the time, so maybe it seemed funnier than it was, but even the opening was ahead of its time. The names were read in a sort of backwards, forwards order. Then the announcer yelled, "Terrific," in a totally bored and sarcastic voice. Anyway, that's that. So some people loved it. I mean, this clearly these two episodes made an impression on that fella who had time in his life to write an IMDb review. I bet he's on Yelp a lot too, that fella. Anyway, so that's the Hart and Lorne Terrific Hour. Now, at this point, Lorne is really working with some big names in entertainment. Over the next few years, he writes and produces TV specials for Lily Tomlin, Flip Wilson, Perry Como, which takes us to our designated line of demarcation, SNL, 1975. So SNL premiered October 11th, 1975. I'll give you some stats and we'll kind of chit-chat about it because I actually know a lot about SNL, probably more than most humans should. So the original host was George Carlin. The musical guests were Janis Ian and Billy Preston. So notice how they had two because the show did evolve over time. It also featured a short film from Albert Brooks, real name Albert Einstein. That came up in the last podcast. It featured the Muppets, featured stand-up from Andy Kaufman, which was iconic, right? Andy Kaufman. It's also featured, that moment is featured in Man on the Moon, the movie about Andy Kaufman. It was supposed to feature also some stand-up from Billy Crystal. So Billy Crystal was a young New York comic at the time, and he had a whole long bit that he did. It was like a story, right? And they needed to cut him for time. He's like, well, I can't. Then the story wouldn't make sense. And basically, his agent said, fuck you then. And without Billy knowing it, the agent said, fuck you, we're going to walk. And to this day, Billy Crystal regrets. He's like, shit, that could have been iconic for me, the first ever episode of SNL, and my representation without me knowing it said no. It was a whole thing, but later on, you know, it would work out because he would years later be a cast member on the show. So as you can see, the show and its format and the size of its cast evolve a lot over the years, right? So I've read tons of books about this. I've read several books about John Belushi, including Wired by Bob Woodward, and then, you know, his wife Judy Belushi wrote a great book. I read Live From, I think the best book is Live From New York. So look that up, from the early 2000s. A book called Live From New York is probably the best SNL book. I've read books by Jay Mohr. He wrote a great one called Gasping for Airtime, David Spade, Steve Martin. And even though that's books about their lives, SNL is heavily featured in it. I read several books about Andy Kaufman. Again, SNL is heavily featured in it. And I'm probably tons of books I'm forgetting. So let's do a brief history. Like off the top of my head, kind of here's kind of a brief history of SNL. So at the time, in 1975, the 11:30 time slot on Saturday, they were airing Johnny Carson reruns. Johnny Carson didn't want this. He felt it was too much saturation. He didn't like it, but he did control the airtime. So basically, he asked NBC to do something different. NBC somehow seeks out Lorne Michaels, right? And he's brought in to basically create a show, and he's given carte blanche, quite frankly. Now, what you're going to find is tons of people take credit for creating SNL. Albert Brooks thinks it was him. Of course, Lorne says it was him. Chevy says he weighed in heavily. Billy Crystal even says, well, they asked me to be the permanent host. I mean, there's a million people all say they suggested this, and that part was me, and this was me. But the OG concept was basically to be an anti-TV show, anti-establishment. You got to remember how groundbreaking it was. And I'll give you some examples here in a minute, but remember, it was really risque for its time. I mean, goofing on the president, making light of drugs and all of it being live, it felt dangerous. You could tell it was live. It's not the show then that it is now, no disrespect to the show now, but I'm going to give you some examples of how people are like blown away by how live it felt. There's two stories that always come to mind for me. One is in an early episode, John Belushi used to have a recurring character as the delicatessen guy, the samurai delicatessen, right? Or samurai dry cleaner. It was a samurai thing. But by the way, before we even get into that story, you got to remember, even that wasn't something that they knew they were going to do. It never occurred to them to have recurring characters. Because the first time they tried to recur something, it might have been samurai, they were all like, well, we already did that. And it's like, yeah, but what if we do it again in this scenario or that scenario? So many things that we take for granted now, they were creating at the time. So back to Belushi. So he's playing samurai. I believe it was samurai delicatessen, but it might have been samurai dry cleaner or samurai night fever, all that. But he cuts his head. So it must have been delicatessen because he had a knife. Cuts his head and he's bleeding early on in the show. So for the rest of the show, everyone, oh no, he may have cut someone else's head. Anyway, someone's fucking head got cut. I'm rambling on here. But for the rest of the show, the whole rest of it, every sketch, every actor is wearing a bandage on their head. Like, to kind of making fun of the cut head. I mean, so that's how in real time the show is evolving, because it's a live sketch. Someone gets their head cut. It might have been Buck Henry now that I think about it, but it happened from Belushi. But anyway, and then the rest of the thing, they're you know, having bandages on their head. Cut to a really cool story, also in the 70s. So they're in the middle of a show. Like, the show is happening. It's live. It is happening. It's Saturday night. It's going on. And word starts buzzing around town that all four of the Beatles happen to be in Manhattan. And that's rare. That doesn't often happen. In fact, the rumor was that Paul McCartney was at the Dakota visiting John Lennon. George was somewhere in town. Ringo was in town somewhere else. So they get the idea of, like, let's be the show that can bring back the Beatles. So Lorne goes on air live with a check. And I forget the amount. God, I wish I remember the amount. Shit, let's say it was like $8,000 or something. He's like, you know, hey, you know, we've heard you guys are all in New York. We're prepared to pay you $8,000 if you'll come and make an appearance here on SNL. We'd love to have you. You know, you can split it evenly, or, you know, you give Ringo less if you'd like. And the audience erupts in laughter. But I mean, that's how dangerous this show was. It's live. It's happening. And in the moment they decide, hey, let's change it. Let's get the Beatles to show up. Incidentally, the Beatles did not show up. But there is a cool movie, a TV movie made about it. Damn it. early 2000s on VH1. I think it was called Two of Us, and it was like a hypothetical. Like, what was that conversation like? Paul visiting John, them seeing it on SNL, and having the conversation, should we go? And there's a cool movie about that. But here was the OG cast. John Belushi, Dan Aykroyd, Chevy Chase, Garrett Morris, Gilda Radner, Lorraine Newman, Jane Curtin. That's it. Six people. Now think about today. It's like 10 people plus and featuring and blah. It's like 15 fucking people. I don't know how you get your sketches on. Originally it was just six, and here's where they came from. So John Belushi, Dan Aykroyd, and Gilda all came from Second City, right? So they were at Second City. Gilda was Second City, along with Dan Aykroyd up in Toronto. John Belushi came out of Second City in Chicago. But John had brought them all to New York to do the National Lampoon Radio Hour. So they're already in New York anyway. They always said John was kind of the innovator. So they leave Second City. They're working for National Lampoon in New York doing the radio hour there. And then they got an off-Broadway show called Lemmings, which was a smash. Smash for National Lampoon. And then in like 2007, National Lampoon would bring that back as a college show. And I know that because yours truly was cast in it. So how about that? So that was kind of my only connection to SNL, was that I kind of did this thing similar with National Lampoon. Anyway, so now you got Belushi, Gilda, and Dan Aykroyd, you know, all with National Lampoon. Now Lemmings is a live show, which is a massive hit. Chevy Chase was also in that show. So now Chevy becomes a big star. And so when they're casting it, this is how it all came together. Garrett Morris was a playwright. Lorraine Newman was a groundling in Los Angeles. And Jane Curtin, I don't know her background. She was just an actor, I suppose. So anyway, they were meant to be the supporting cast, these people. It wasn't like, hey, there's the show and here's a star of the show. The star of the show was supposed to be the guests and the short films and the Muppets. The sketches were almost incidental, right? And no one ever expected people to know Chevy's name, Dan's name, you know, Belushi's name. So, of course, though, what happened, and it stayed this way, they became bigger stars ultimately than the guests, you know. So the original title, though, was simply Saturday Night. It was not Saturday Night Live, because there was already a Saturday Night Live on TV. It was a show hosted by Howard Cosell, and it featured the primetime players. So eventually, when it went off the air, they stole the name Live from SNL, stole the name Live Saturday Night Live, and they started calling themselves a Not Ready for Primetime Players. So if you ever wondered where that name came from, that's where it came from. The show blows up. Chevy becomes a big star. Now, no one saw this coming. Chevy was not supposed to be in the cast. Okay, so Chevy was actually hired on as a writer. And then in the process, they decided, hey, maybe he'd be good for on camera as well. Now going into this, and there's some bad blood cause, but going into this, Belushi was the bigger star. Belushi was a very big star at Second City. Belushi was the star of Lemmings. I mean, Time Magazine's talking about Lemmings and they cannot get enough of John Belushi. And so when they go to SNL, Belushi's mind is blown that he's not the big star. Chevy Chase blew up. Now, Chevy claims it's because he was doing Weekend Update, and he'd always say, I'm Chevy Chase and you're not, so America knew his name. But immediately, SNL is a big hit, and immediately, Chevy's the breakaway star, and he would leave after one season. Now, he claims he left because he's like, no, the purpose of the show is to destroy television. It would be stupid to keep coming back. Like, we did our job. It's time to move on. I call bullshit on him. I think he just wanted to do movies. He's known as being an arrogant fuck, and I don't like Chevy Chase. That's enough about Chevy Chase. Chevy leaves. He gets replaced by another Second City alum, Bill Murray. So Bill Murray comes in. It takes him a while to hit, and he was always like the third cop or this. It just wasn't working until finally Bill Murray one day goes and appears on Weekend Update and basically says, this isn't working for me, is it? And America just kind of took to it. They liked it. They're like, we like this guy. He's making fun of himself. And of course, then Bill Murray became a major, major star in SNL and then a major, major movie star. They all became movie stars. So, you know, Belushi becomes a movie star. He eventually leaves at the end of the fifth season, takes Dan Aykroyd with him. Chevy had already been gone. Bill Murray's like, fuck it, I'll go too. So basically the entire cast and Lorne all leave at the end of the fifth season. They're gone. So 1980, they're all gone. So Lorne left at the end of the fifth season, as did the rest of the cast. Jean Dumanian came in and as the producer of the show. She did a shit job. She was not well liked. She was oddly very close friends with Woody Allen, and apparently he was behind the scenes calling a lot of the shots, which I think is strange. But her claim to fame is that she is the one who technically cast Eddie Murphy. So Eddie Murphy's an 18-year-old kid. He keeps calling and calling and calling. She eventually hired him, so she does deserve that credit. However, she never used him. He wouldn't become a star until a year later when Gene Dumanian's fired and Dick Ebersol steps up to take over producing the show. Now, Dick Ebersol is coming from the sports world. I think he's ABC Sports or NBC Sports or some fucking sports. It must be NBC. That makes more sense. So he's a sports guy. He steps in, And though he was never well-liked, he was considered not very funny. But everyone claims he's the one who gets credit for saving the show because NBC was ready to cut the cord. They were done. So Dick Ebersol steps up. He fires the entire cast except for two people, Eddie Murphy and Joe Piscopo. He then brings in kind of some people who already are names, like Harry Shearer, who actually kind of was in the original cast, but that's a long story, I'm like telling it. Billy Crystal, you know, those kind of guys. And of course, he had Eddie and Joe. And he, over 5 years of doing the show, he did a pretty good job. He saved the show. But a couple funny stories about that. One of his writers that he hired was a then unknown Larry David. And Larry David never got a single sketch on the air, which is funny because some of his stories from that ended up becoming classic, iconic Seinfeld episodes. There's two stories I always tell. One, he tells a story about how he pitched a sketch that he loved and no one in the room laughed at it. And it was about a guy, an architect designing a building. So there's this guy who's like going to own the building and he's talking to his architect. The architect rolls out the blueprint, he's going through everything. And the owner goes, what's that right there? And the fellow goes, but that's an elevator. He goes, no, that little thing in the elevator, what is that? He goes, oh, that's a stool for the operator, the elevator operator to sit down. And the owner's like, well, I don't think I want my elevator operator to sit. And it becomes this whole thing about, is the elevator operator allowed to sit down in a stool? Now, if you know anything about Larry David's comedy and Seinfeld and Curb Your Enthusiasm, you get it, right? That's kind of how Larry's brain works. Well, they ended up not using that on SNL, but it became a famous Seinfeld episode where George Costanza is, you know, something with that clothing store, and he tells the security guard that he doesn't have to stand up, he can sit down. Then the security guard sits down, falls asleep, and the place gets robbed, whatever it is. But anyway, it came from that. But another famous story with Larry David and Dick Ebersol directly became a famous SNL or a famous Seinfeld story as well, which was Larry David was really frustrated. He wasn't getting anything on the air. And one night they're writing and they're at the table in a meeting and he just fucking quits. He yells at Dick Ebersol, he's like, I fucking quit, and he leaves. The second he hits the street, he's like, shit, I can't afford to have quit. Like, I can't do it. So someone suggests to him, just show up on Monday and act like it never happened. And sure as shit, Larry David showed up on Monday, acted like it never happened. And that became a famous Seinfeld story too, where again, I think it was George Costanza did it. He quit a job, realized it was a mistake, and he showed up on Monday acting as if it never happened. Anyway. So that's Dick Ebersol. Lorne came back in 1985. He did a weird thing at first. So now Lorne's back in 85, this big grand return to the show. And he did a really weird thing. He had a weird cast of kind of famous actors. So it was Anthony Michael Hall, Robert Downey Jr., Joan Cusack, Randy Quaid, like really weird shit. But again, it did, which didn't work. So a lot of you don't know that. Robert Downey Jr. was a cast member for a year. Randy Quaid was a cast member for a year. Joan Cusack for a year. And Anthony Michael Hall didn't work. But then after that, he settled in and, of course, turned the show around. So and the rest is history. Now, I need to also point out that during SNL, Lorne was keeping busy with outside projects. So again, 47 years with SNL and 218 producing credits. So the guy's not just doing SNL. So early in the SNL days, he produced a special for the Beach Boys, Paul Simon, lots of stuff like that. By the way, Paul Simon was a staple in the original shows. It's so much so that he was hanging out. Dan Aykroyd, you know, got engaged to Carrie Fisher, but then Paul Simon married Carrie Fisher. Like it was very incestuous. So Paul Simon was always on the show when he wasn't on the show. He's hanging out at the show. 1978, Lorne produced The Ruddles, which was a cool TV movie, kind of like a satirizing the Beatles. I'm going to pull it up here on my phone. Where's The Ruddles? It's called The Ruddles. All You Need Is Cash. Charts the adventures of the Prefab Four, possibly the most famous band of all time. I remember being a kid and seeing this in the video store and renting it because I love the Beatles. It's got a cool cast. You know, so it's a lot of the... Who else? Who's in this? Eric Idle. What's group is that? I know. So Monty Python. I can't believe I forgot Monty Python. So there's a lot of the Monty Python people. Eric Idle was in this. Michael Palin, also from Monty Python. George Harrison was in it. Bianca Jagger, John Belushi, Dan Aykroyd, Gilda Radner, Bill Murray. Who else? Ronnie Wood from the Rolling Stones. So many folks. Al Franken, early Al Franken. He was an early writer on SNL. But you get the gist of it. So basically, it was making fun of the Beatles, but not so much so that George Harrison wasn't willing to be in it. So kind of cool thing. So he does that. 1980, he produces Gilda Live, which was the Broadway version of the show Gilda. Well, it's like the movie version of what Gilda had been doing on Broadway. So I'll read the synopsis. A filmed version of the Broadway show starring comedian Gilda Radner, complete with the character she made famous on the TV show Saturday Night Live. So Gilda was just, God, Gilda was talented. Gilda was so likable and talented, and we lost her in the early 80s to cancer, which really sucks. So speaking of the early 80s, so now Lorne, he's doing things like Steve Martin's Best Show Ever, the concert in Central Park, which is the famous Simon and Garfunkel concert. He did a Coneheads TV movie, which was animated. He did Neil Young in Berlin. So he's just producing all this content. Then in 1984, he decides to create a new sketch comedy show. Now remember, he left SNL in 1980. Now it's 1984. He's going to compete against SNL because he's not back yet. So not the same night though. This was on Fridays. But think about the balls it took and the pressure he must have felt saying, I'm Lorne Michaels. I left SNL and I'm going to create another show to be better than SNL. And it was called The New Show, and it wasn't better than SNL. It got, quite frankly, folks, it only lasted 9 episodes. I know. Sketch comedy show, similar to Saturday Night Live, but nowhere near as successful. Ran one season. Guests included John Candy. So that's the synopsis. I'll go through the cast. It featured Maggie Wheeler. Maggie Wheeler became famous on Friends. She was the chick with the annoying accent that Chandler dated. Hi, Chandler Bing, that chick. Dave Thomas was in this. He was famous from SCTV. Buck Henry, who was always on SNL all the time. Who else? John Candy, Jeff Goldblum, Catherine O'Hara. Ooh, go watch Schitt's Creek. She's the best. Steve Martin appeared, Lorraine Newman, Dennis Quaid. So no shortage of famous people. Terry Garr, Kevin Klein, Randy Quaid, Cindy Lauper, Gilda Radner, Joy Behar, Jesus Christ. Al Franken, Tom Davis, Carrie Fisher, Penny Marshall, Candace Bergen, Steve Guttenberg, Raul Julia, David Johansen. He's famous. David Johansen, he was in the New York Dolls. And then he was also feeling hot, Buster Poindexter. That's David Johansen. Randy Newman, he'll come up later in the podcast. Paul Simon, you get it. John Mellencamp. So lots of people were featured. It didn't work. So in 1985, maybe with tail between his legs, I don't know, he goes back to SNL. Weird. Does that weird thing like I said, does the established actors, Downey Jr., Joan Cusack. Oh, Damon Wayans was on. He got fired, though, for throwing a sketch on purpose because he was pissed off. It's funny, though, of that cast, so there's 3 Oscar-nominated actors amongst them all, which is Robert Downey Jr., Joan Cusack, and Randy Quaid. Now, the experiment did not work, but he settled in, like I said, and then he eventually got to 1990s cast, which I always thought of as my cast. So whenever people talk about SNL, oftentimes I find they talk about their cast, which is like the cast that was big when they started watching it. So for me, my cast was the 1990 cast, which was Phil Hartman, Mike Myers, Dana Carvey, Jan Hooks, Kevin Nealon, Dennis Miller, and Victoria Jackson. That was like when I started watching. Those were the big stars. You tuned in for Dana. You really did, man. Dennis Miller doing Weekend Update. Later on, Kevin Nealon. But I mean, for me, for my money, I was big into Dana Carvey and Mike Myers. Now, that's my cast. However, I will say, a couple years later, a rock star cast came in. So my OG cast was Dana and Mike and Phil Hartman. But man, all of a sudden you get Sandler, Spade, Rob Schneider. Because people forget, Rob Schneider crushed in SNL. Now he became a shitbag afterwards, but on the show he crushed. Even Chris Rock, Chris Farley, oh my God, Farley. So I feel like I had 2 casts. I had the 1990 cast, but then a couple years after that, I mean, you were tuning in to see Sandler and Farley and Spade. Those fucking guys crushed. It was a cool show, man. I don't know. Big part of my childhood. So anyway, again, during SNL, Lorne is keeping busy producing lots of other stuff, right? So he's doing lots of best ofs. Then he does 1986 as the Three Amigos, right? You guys seen the Three Amigos? So this was his foray into big movies. 3 actors accept an invitation to a Mexican village to perform their on-screen bandit fighter roles, unaware that is the real thing. I gotta tell you, I've seen the movie. I didn't like it. It was directed by John Landis, though. Big director. He's the one who's directing The Twilight Zone when Jennifer Jason Leigh's dad got his head cut off. Oof. It was written by Lorne Michaels. Also written by Steve Martin. Also written by Randy Newman. I told you he'd come back. You got a friend in me. That's Randy Newman, the singer. He also co-wrote this movie. How about that? So remember those best ofs I mentioned? Lorne keeps producing those. It's people like Best of Belushi, Best of Aykroyd, Best of Chevy Chase, Best of Gilda. By the way, do yourself a favor, go watch Best of Dan Aykroyd. That might be the best of all time. Aykroyd was a fucking murderer on that show. He was great. Anyway, he's also, though, producing music specials, anniversary specials, award shows. He's doing stuff for the Stones. He's producing the Emmys, Superman's 50th anniversary, which I thought was odd, but Lorne's producing that. Lorne's also producing SNL's 15th anniversary. In 1991, he produces a TV movie that was a pilot that never got picked up. It's worth talking about, though. It was 1991. It's called Look Well. I read about this, and I'd always heard of it. I've never seen it, but I'm like, God, if there was ever a show created that I know I would love, this is it. Again, 1991 TV movie as a pilot did not get picked up called Look Well. The former star of a canceled cop TV show solves crimes. It was the pilot episode for a TV series that was never picked up. Let me tell you this. No, the star, Adam West. So Adam West playing a former TV or cop. Now he's like, you know, trying to solve real crimes. It was written by Robert Smigel. What? And Conan O'Brien. He's going to come back in a big way on this podcast. It wasn't a hit, but it should have been. But you know what was a hit? 1992, Wayne's World. Wayne's World. Wayne's World. Part of Time. Excellent. Woo-hoo-hoo. This was fucking huge. So let me just explain to you, if you're not old enough to remember, or if you're too young to remember, or you're too old to remember, too young to remember, I was at the perfect time. Young Fanichek, 13 years old, 14 years old, 15 years old. You're tuning into SNL mainly to see fucking Wayne's World. And whenever it would pop up, public access television, Peoria, Illinois, you'd go nuts because you knew Wayne's World was coming on. This show or this sketch crushed it. So there's two things to talk about here, right? First of all, this is a great time to talk about Lorne contractually getting to produce SNL alumni's projects. This is worth pointing out. There's some good here, some bad here. So you're going to notice that Lorne's always involved in producing SNL alumni projects. Now, some are SNL properties like Wayne's World, The Coneheads, Stewart Saves His Family, A Night at the Roxbury, etc. Hey, those are SNL characters. I get it. So there's some ownership there. But some are not. He produces Tommy Boy, Black Sheep, Mean Girls, Baby Mama, those last two both feature Tina Fey. A lot of people don't dig this. So, and a great example like Jon Stewart, right? So Jon Stewart is famous for obviously being that you know, he was probably the most well-known host of The Daily Show. But he launched the career of Stephen Colbert, or the Colbert Report. He launched the career of John Oliver, who to this day has Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, right? He never, though, stepped up and took producing credit for those guys. Like, and he's open about it. He's like, no, that's their career. I'm glad I could help, but that's their show. And a lot of people love that. Right? You know who also said fuck that to Lorne Michaels? Mr. Adam Sandler. Because you're going to notice Adam Sandler done a ton of movies and Lorne's not involved in them. Adam Sandler is quietly the most intelligent SNL person ever. He got out of the show, creates Happy Madison, and making him the smartest and wealthiest alumni there is. And I'll tell you why I say smartest too. First of all, he's making coin, right? He's producing his own shit. He's making a lot of money. He's also giving his friends jobs. But also, if you had to write a book about how to be successful at SNL, Adam Sandler's way of doing it was the way to do it. So typically when you get hired on as a performer at SNL, I only say this because I haven't been in Second City. I've been around it and I saw Sudeikis get it. And I remember when they hired Bill Hader and they both came out of Second City. So I've seen it enough. You get hired on, you're expected to heavily write. You're also expected to not get a lot of screen time. So a lot of people get in there and it's ego and they're fighting to get on. And what Adam Sandler did was the opposite. Sandler got there and did not stop writing. And he wrote for the stars. And what a great example is Dana Carvey. He'd write a great sketch for Dana. He'd bring it to Dana. He'd say, Dana, I wrote this for you. And if Dana liked it, he'd then say, hey, Dana, do you mind if I play that waiter, though, that little role there? And Dana would say, sure. So he's writing something for Mike Myers to star in, for Dana Carvey to star in, for Kevin Nealon to star in, Phil Hartman to star in. And he's asking if he can have a supporting role in it. All of a sudden, he's well-liked. He's on TV all the time. And that's how he rose through the ranks. So that just tells you something about who Adam Sandler is. Doesn't gripe. Doesn't complain. He gets his ass to work. That's Adam Sandler. And Lorne Michaels does not produce his stuff. So there you go. Anyway, the other thing to talk about, though, with Wayne's World is how awesome it was. This fucking movie ruled. The sketches were the best, right? The movie was, I can't describe to you how big a deal this was. I remember, because this is pre-internet, of course, and my lazy fucking parents, we didn't have cable, for fuck's sake. So I was always the last to hear news. I'll never forget, I'm watching something on TV, and I see a commercial for Wayne's World, a movie. I remember picking up my phone and calling all of my friends. Like, we were like, what? They're making this into a movie? That was amazing. So let's take a look. Let's read the synopsis. Two slacker friends try to promote their public access cable show. Let's take a look at the cast. Of course, Mike Myers, Dana Carvey, Rob Lowe with a bit of a comeback, because you forget the late 80s, Mr. Rob Lowe had that sex scandal where he was on videotape having sex with an underage girl. Mm-hmm. And a lot of you don't remember that, but that's true. Tia Carrera was in this. Brian Doyle Murray, that's also from Second City. He's Bill Murray's older brother. Laura Flynn Boyle. No other major stars. Donna Dixon, she's beautiful. That's also Dan Aykroyd's wife. So Great movie, great movie. And two things that really touched my childhood that came out of this movie. And one is Bohemian Rhapsody, right? So you got to remember, I'm like 15 when the movie comes out. I'm not quite driving, but I got some friends who are. I remember specifically, I had this friend named Donald. Donald was the oldest of us. He was the first one to drive, first one with a car. It was an old shitty Chrysler Cordoba, shit brown Chrysler Cordoba. But there was never a more beautiful car in the world because, quite frankly, it represented freedom to me, freedom to us. So I can't tell you, probably in the thousands, how many times would all five, six of us jammed into that Chrysler Cordoba, pop into the cassette tape of Bohemian Rhapsody and start reenacting the Wayne's World scene, right? Also, I can't tell how many times in that same shitty Chrysler Cordoba, we'd pull up next to another car, ask them to roll down their window and ask, and pardon me, do you have any gray Poupon? So we did that shit all the time. So I don't know. Boy, did Wayne's World, I should rewatch it because that movie had a profound effect on my childhood. But I must move on. Alas, I must move on. So from here, Lorne would continue producing the best ofs and SNL alumni projects like Coneheads, Wayne's World 2, all that stuff. 1994, he produces Lassie. I don't know why. I don't want to know why. I'm not even going to read about it. But I do have two stories to tell about Lassie. I think I've told them on the podcast. One, well, I'll just tell the first one. Yeah. So I was at the time in high school, I was working as a messenger during the summers in Manhattan, right? Because I grew up in the Bronx, which the Bronx is going to come back later on this episode too. But I'm in Manhattan, I'm a messenger, and I forget, I'm getting off of work one day right there on 57th Street, and across the street, there's a movie premiere going on, like a red carpet, limousines, and all this shit. I was like, oh, wow, look at that. So I walked across the street to see what's going on, and it turns out it's for Lassie, a movie that I had no intention of seeing then or now or ever. But all the cab drivers were kind of looking over at this African-American woman. I could tell there's something going on, and I look at her, it's like, oh my God, that's Robin Quivers from the Howard Stern Show. So I went up and walked over to her, talked to her, and she couldn't have been nicer, man. So she signed an autograph for me. So I'm over there bullshitting with Robin Quivers. So there you were. I was at the premiere of Lassie meeting Robin Quivers. The other cool thing about that story is there's a little boy in that movie called, his name was Charlie Hoffheimer. And Charlie Hoffheimer, years later, would be on a show called Mad Men, have a pretty good movie career, also go to my wedding, because I know him. So anyway, so one of my wife's best friends was a very successful actress back in the early 2000s, and her husband is Charlie Hoffheimer. Both of them were at my wedding. They're good people. So that's my connection to Lassie, and I'm about done with Lassie now. Moving on from Lassie, 1995, he produces a movie that also touched my high school years. It touched my soul. It's Tommy Boy. How funny is Tommy Boy? That shit still holds up. I watch Tommy Boy probably about once a year. I catch either on purpose or it's on TV. God, it's great. Chris Farley, what a loss. That guy was so fucking funny. After his auto parts tycoon father dies, the overweight, underachieving son teams up with a snide accountant to try and save the family business. What a great movie this was. And it came from, so the story is the lore, if you will, is that Lorne approached Spade and Farley and said, look, you guys are so funny together, the way you interact, the way you make fun of each other. Why not make a movie about that? So basically, it was based on how they interact. You know, Chris was always the big goofy one. Spade, who was very close friends with him, was always kind of the snarky one. And Lorne just was tickled by it. So they brought in a writer named Fred Wolf. He wrote it. Later on, I would be in a movie directed by Fred Wolf. How about that? I talked about that when we talked about Steve Zahn's balls. Anyway, so that's my other connection. But Tommy was so great. I mean, what a great movie. Let's take a look at that cast, right? Farley, Spade, Brian Dennehy, who we just lost recently, Bo Derek, Julie Warner. That was the love interest for Farley. What a great Rob Lowe back. Rob Lowe. Oof. Good movie. Tommy Boy. Do yourself a favor. If you haven't seen Tommy Boy, go see it. Now, let's talk about The Kids in the Hall. Great sketch show. 1988, 2021, 111 episodes. I never saw it. And I was very well prepared to go through. I was going to read the synopsis for you and talk about how influential it was and try to be cool. The fact is, man, I got some blind spots in my shit. And one of them is The Kids in the Hall. I just never watched it. I don't know. I was in high school. I was going out. I don't know. But that and Monty Python, those are two major comedy blind spots for me. So anyway, but Lorne produced The Kids in the Hall. And if you want to learn more about Kids in the Hall, don't tune into Fanacek. Okay. 1996, he then produces Black Sheep, which is a shittier version of Tommy Boy. I'm not going to talk about it, but it's Farley, it's Spade, same fucking movie, basically, same fucking thing, but just crappier. Now, again, he's doing more best-ups, right? Some SNL alumni projects. He's doing A Night at the Roxbury with Chris Kattan, right? 1999, or Will Ferrell, too. What am I talking about? It's funny, too. So A Night at the Roxbury is Chris Kattan and Will Ferrell. I just saw something on TMZ not too long ago where, like, they saw Chris Kattan, like, at an airport or something. something. Like, hey, Kratan. And the big thing is he'd like to do a Night at the Roxbury sequel. And like, I bet you would. I bet you probably valet parking cars living at this point. You think you want to be in a big movie with Will Ferrell? I'm sure you do. So that made me laugh. And I was like, yeah, no shit, Sherlock. I bet you do want to do a sequel to that. But anyway, Night at the Roxbury, 1999, Lorne produced a Superstar, which was Molly Shannon, based on the Mary Catherine Gallagher character. 2000, The Ladies' Man. Yeah. Cavathier, Tim Meadows movie. He does that. 2003, he produces The Tracy Morgan Show. So again, he's got his hands in all this alumni stuff. I'm a big Tracy Morgan guy. I think Tracy's very funny. I'm not a huge fan of his stand-up, but I like his acting. I thought he was very underrated on SNL. Very interesting guy. Astronaut Jones. Like, what a weird character, Astronaut Jones. Rocket, I'm flying a rocket. I'm packing a suitcase. And it was just Tracy being Tracy in like this weird mid-century, modern century. I don't know. It was very bizarre shit. Really, really funny. I also loved Brian Fellow, Safari Planet. Oh, that was the best. Look at that. A Brian Fellow, Safari Planet. I'm Brian Fellows. That parrot is a liar. I'm Brian Fellows. Anyway, I'm doing horrible impressions now. But look that up. I love it. But anyway, the Tracy Morgan Show, though, was pretty forgettable. Only lasted 18 episodes. Didn't go anywhere. And that's okay, because Tracy would land an acting job later, which we'll talk about. But we should, before that, talk about 2004, Mean Girls. What an iconic movie Mean Girls was. Still holds up, too, man, except for the part where Lindsay Lohan's career took a major dump. But Katie Heron is a hit with the Plastics, the A-list girl clique at her new school, until she makes the mistake of falling for Aaron Samuels, the ex-boyfriend of Alpha Plastic, Regina George. What a great movie this was. I mean, it holds up. It's a lot of fun. It was Lindsay Lohan, Rachel McAdams, and she became an it girl after this. Tina Fey wrote it and, of course, starred in it. Tim Meadows was in it. Amy Poehler was in it. Anna Gasteyer was in it. Lacey Chabert from Party of Five. Just great. Oh, Neil Flynn's in it. Neil Flynn became famous. Later on, he'd be on Scrubs. He was the janitor. And then later on, he'd be the father in the middle. I saw him once at the Burbank Airport. Uh-huh. So if you're ever at a cocktail party and you're like, hey, do you know anyone who's ever seen Neil Flynn at an airport? You can say, yeah, Fanacek at the Burbank Airport. And I've only been in the Burbank Airport once, so it's apparently very lucky for me, because I was normally an LAX guy. Not to sound cool, but anyway, I'm rambling. Amanda Seyfried was in this, and I once had dinner restaurant and saw her there, so how about that? So that's two connections for me to Mean Girls. Great movie, became a major Broadway play, and I know that because my daughters listen to that music constantly. I don't like the songs from it, but it is what it is. But man, that was just an iconic film, and there's talk of a sequel. But again, it's the same thing as Chris Kattan. It's Lindsay Lohan who wants to do the sequel, and I get it, because you're not working right now. So anyway, so and then he's back to the best ofs and the special. So Lauren does countless things of that. And now would be a great time to tell you how lucrative those best ofs are. Because I keep mentioning he's doing best ofs. Best of Dana Carvey, best of Mike Myers, best of Tracy Morgan. Here's why he does them, and here's why they're lucrative. So Lorne Michaels owns something called Broadway Video, right? And they are the distribution method for all of that stuff. So he is making the quan, because Broadway Video owns SNL, right? Then he's redistributing all that stuff on video cassette, DVD, now it's streaming, and that's generating income. So it's all produced by Lorne. He owns it. He is his own distribution method. He is making serious quantage, if you will. So that's why everyone gets a best of. I mean, because even Chris Rock has the best of, and I like Chris Rock, but he wasn't that great in SNL. He was fun. I mean, you like the guy, but he didn't do much good work on SNL. In fact, he asked to get out of his contract early, and they said, no problem, Chris. So that was that. So that's the history behind the best ofs. What else do I want to talk about? 2007, he then produces another SNL alumni project, Hot Rod, which was Andy Samberg's big foray into film. Self-proclaimed stuntman Rod Kimball is preparing for the jump of his life to clear 15 buses to raise money for his abusive stepfather Frank's life-saving heart operation. I remember exactly where I was when I saw this, because I've never seen this. So there you go. I don't know. I mean, it's got a killer cast, so if you look at the cast, it's Andy Samberg, Isla Fisher. Ooh, that's what's his name? Ooh, come on. Who's she married to? Let me pause this podcast. Sacha Baron Cohen. I wish I hadn't told you I paused that. It would have sounded cooler. But anyway, Ian McShane, Yorma, whatever his face is, that's the Lonely Island guy. Bill Hader, Danny McBride. God, Danny McBride is funny. Sissy Spacek, Will Arnett, Chris Parnell, he's SNL. Anyway, that is Hot Rod. I've never seen it. Then he does, in 2008, produces Baby Mama. That's a fun movie for Tina Fey and Amy Poehler. I have seen that one. Basically, Tina Fey hires Amy Poehler to be a surrogate mother, and comedy ensues. But there is something huge we didn't talk about. So we missed a whole big chunk we got to get back to. And it's Conan O'Brien. Late Night with Conan O'Brien premiered on September 13th, 1993. And boy, what a road it took to get there. So let's go back in time to the early 90s. Johnny Carson's hosting The Tonight Show, had been hosting it for over 30 years. I think 33 years to be exact. He announces his retirement. So now this fight ensues between Letterman and Leno. So at the time, of course, Johnny Carson hosts the show, The Tonight Show. Afterwards is Late Night with David Letterman. That was Johnny's guy. Johnny loved him. He put Letterman in that role. He wanted Letterman to succeed him. However, he had been using Jay Leno as a temporary host whenever he would take vacations and all that. So Leno was kind of the guest host, kind of the permanent guest host, if you will. Leno and his then manager kind of leaked the story that Carson's going to leave. So kind of forced Carson's hand into announcing it. This whole fight ensued. There's a great book about it called The Late Shift. And they made a really cool HBO TV movie about it called The Late Shift. So everyone learned the story, you should check it out. Ultimately, Leno did some pretty underhanded things. He got the show. But NBC wanted their cake. They wanted to eat it too. So what they did was they didn't want to lose either one of them. So they gave the show to Jay Leno. But they told Letterman, in a couple months, we'll give it to you. But there was also caveats where they get out of that deal. So basically, they're giving it to Leno to keep him. They're telling Letterman, or they're giving it to Leno to keep him. They're telling Letterman he's going to get it in a few months. But there is the option to back out of that deal. So Letterman wanted it. Letterman wanted it bad, and he was willing to take a shitty deal, but he did hire an agent, and that agent was Michael Ovitz. Look him up if you don't know Michael Ovitz. He hires Michael Ovitz, who's like the fucking godfather. Ovitz gets in there and says, David, I'm sorry. I mean, I've done all the research. You should walk. Letterman then does the last thing he thinks to do is he calls Johnny Carson, and he talks to Johnny, and Johnny says, you know what, David? If I were you, I'd walk. They're not treating you right. So Letterman walked. Letterman said, fuck it. Leno can have it. He goes across the street to ABC, or CBS rather. He gets his show, and that's that. So they announced that Letterman's replacement will be a dude that no one had ever heard of. It was a former SNL writer, former Simpsons writer, former groundling, Conan O'Brien. And I remember this was like a big deal. People were like, who's Conan O'Brien? Like, no one knew. Like, we're like, what the fuck? You know, because there was a lot of rumor Dana Carvey was going to get it. I think they offered it to Dana. Like, everyone expected a big-time comedian to step in. And they're like, who the hell is that? So he took a beating. Conan took a beating. They made fun of his looks, his hair. He wasn't funny. The show sucks. But then, you know, it kind of came to. I mean, it grew on people. I will say this. You know, I think a lot of anyone with a good sense of humor, I like to think I have a good sense of humor. You may not hear it on the podcast, but I think in life I've got a pretty good sense of humor. And I think sometimes there are certain things that shaped it, like certain people have shaped it. I think Bill Murray is very big in my comedy world. Conan O'Brien's actually very big in my comedy world. I really love the Conan O'Brien show. I watched it a lot. I studied it. I loved his writing. I loved the weird shit he would do. So yeah, I'm actually really big into Conan O'Brien. So he had the show for a long time, but then eventually NBC would fuck up again when Conan got The Tonight Show. There's another great book about this. I forget what the name of this book is called, but it's the same author who did The Tonight Show, or who did The Late Shift. So basically, Leno's number one. Number one. They force him to retire, though, right? They force him to retire, and they're going to give it to Conan O'Brien, probably because they wanted to keep Conan O'Brien. They give it to Conan, but Leno doesn't go away. They then give Leno a show at 10 o'clock, which is unheard of. So now Conan's like, what the fuck? Like, the guy replaced it, now going on before me. Then they talked about what they were going to do is say, well, you're still technically, Conan, going to have The Tonight Show, but now The Tonight Show is going to come on after midnight. And Conan's like, no, but that's not The Tonight Show. But it was contractually in there they could do that. And he basically left. He walked. You know, he said, this isn't what I signed up for. And it broke his heart, but he left. They gave the show back to Leno, who again was number one. And while he was number one, they forced him to retire again and gave it to Fallon. I just don't understand. NBC's a fucking mess. And there's really two morals of the story. One is NBC sucks. And two, Conan needs better fucking representation. Because I'll tell you this right now. My people will get fucked. I would have been all over that shit. And that would have been a tough fucking day for NBC, let me tell you. Anyway, where were we while I was talking shit about NBC? Oh, yeah. Best of. Okay, continues all the best of stuff, right? 2010, he produces MacGruber. I don't know. I never saw it, but I wasn't that into the sketch either. That was a pretty one-note sketch. I'm shocked they made a movie out of it. 2011, he produces Up All Night. I'm not going to go too deep into this, but what a shit show this became. So this was a vehicle for Maya Rudolph and Christina Applegate. What's really weird about this show is it started off as a single camera show. So for those of you not in the know, a single camera show would be like Modern Family, right? Modern Family is a single camera show. Somewhere after the first season or second season, like that, they decided to change it to a four-camera show, which is your traditional sitcom, which would be like Home Improvement. And I should have tuned in to watch because I was curious what that would look like. But I don't see how you take a show that's single camera that people are watching, people are following this, and decide, well, now we're going to make it into a four-camera show. I don't know. But the stars didn't like it either, so they walked. Christina Applegate walked. Maya Rudolph walked. So that's up all night. 2012, he produces The Guilt Trip. That was a little movie with Seth Rogen, Barbara Streisand, and Pedro Lopez. I know what you're thinking. You're like, who's Pedro Lopez? Well, he's my friend. That's all you need to know. I went through Second City with his son, Victor Lopez. So his dad, Pedro, was always hanging around the theater, and his dad basically has a great story. He retired. I think he was a teacher, actually. You know, he's in his 60s, retires, decides he wants to dabble in acting, and he's had a killer career. He actually was one of the main bad guys in Ozark, the last couple seasons of Ozark. He had a small role in this movie, and it's just so great to see him. He was such a nice guy. I knew his son really well, because we were at Second City together, like literally the same cast. I did several shows with his son, Victor, and Pedro ended up having a big career, and I'm really happy for him. Couldn't happen to a nicer guy. But that's The Guilt Trip. No one else liked it, though, so that's why the highlight of it is really, in my opinion, my buddy Pedro Lopez. Now, all right, wait, we forgot something. He produced a massive hit from 2006 to 2013, and it's called 30 Rock. We should probably talk about it. Oh my god, this show was a fucking juggernaut. My phone shut off, let me pull it up. Let's read about there. First, I'll read you the synopsis. Liz Lemon, head writer of the sketch comedy show TGS with Tracy Jordan, must deal with an arrogant new boss and a crazy new star while trying to run a successful television show without losing her mind. Lasted again from 06 to 13, 138 episodes. It was the brainchild of Miss Tina Fey. Sorry, Tina Fey, Alec Baldwin, Tracy Morgan, Jack McBrayer, also Second City, Scott Adsit, Second City, Judah Friedlander, stand-up, Jane Krakowski, she's been around forever. Jane Krakowski was a little girl. She was Cousin Eddie's daughter in the original Vacation movie. I mean, do you French kiss? Or no, she tells Audrey, I French kiss. And Audrey's like, so what? Everyone does. She's like, yeah, but Daddy says I'm the best. That's so nasty. That's Jane Krakowski. She's got that Heather Graham disease where she does not age. Jane Krakowski is going to be 85 years old and still probably pretty fucking hot. And she's had a great career. She, you know, a lot of movies, but she did, what's that show that everyone loved in the late 90s with Calista Flockhart? Ally McBeal. So Jane Krakowski was on that. She had a long run on 30 Rock. So 30 Rock was a juggernaut, man. Great show, and of course, because it had Tina Fey, Lauren had his hands in it. So it's loosely based, of course, on her days at SNL, so I guess he deserves it. But you know what else we forgot? We forgot Conan's replacement. So Lorne Michaels has his hands in this too, speaking of his hands in the cookie jar. Check this out. So Conan's replacement was Late Night with Jimmy Fallon, and Leno's ultimate replacement, The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon, and Jimmy Fallon's replacement, Late Night with Seth Meyers. All those shows, Lorne produces. So I'm going to recap that. Late Night with Jimmy Fallon, which became The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon, which then adds to the mix Late Night with Seth Meyers. He produces all those. So that's right. Lorne produces both The Tonight Show and Late Night. That's Monday through Friday. Then on Saturday night, he produces SNL. That's six nights a week of comedy. Six nights a week of comedy. Who else has ever done that? Who else? And he's redistributing all through Broadway Video. This dude has quietly become one of the wealthiest motherfuckers on the planet. And he's still doing tons of SNL best of shit, you know, for some walking around money. I mean, he's still pumping them out all the time. Everyone at SNL gets a best of. So let's not sleep on some other shit that he's done, though, okay? So 2014, he produced Mulaney. So John Mulaney, great stand-up. Do yourself a favor. Go watch some John Mulaney. He was also a writer for SNL for a long time. And his show lasted 17 episodes. A fun thing about John Mulaney, so if you like John Hader doing Stefan in SNL, so, you know, he would appear on Weekend Update as Stefan, the weirdo club kid who knew a lot about clubs. And the joke there was that Bill Hader never knew what the lines were going to be. It was being written, like it was written without him ever seeing the cue cards. And it was John Mulaney who was under the desk with the cue cards. So a little bit of a story there. 2015, Lorne produced Adele live in New York City. Adele's not my cup of tea. I don't know. I get that she's really famous. People seem to love her. I don't get it. Adele? Rolling in the Deep. I don't know. I just don't understand like why she's connected with so many people. 2016, he produced Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, Tina Fey movie. I've not seen it. 2016, he produced Maya and Marty, a variety show with the great Maya Rudolph and Martin Short. I have seen that. I'm a big Martin Short guy. But variety shows don't work. Stop. Like in the 70s, they worked. I love that. Every year we get new variety shows. No one's interested. Anyway, here's what I want to talk about, though. A show that he quietly produced that not many people have seen is called Detroiters. Let me pull up Detroiters because this is worth talking about because one of the stars of it has done some funny shit. So Detroiters is this, a single camera buddy comedy that centers on Sam and Tim, two local ad men who make low budget commercials in Detroit, Michigan. But the two best friends, much like the city in which they live, aspire to achieve great things. Now it stars Sam Richardson and Tim Robinson. If you've ever seen Veep, you know Sam Richardson. This dude is funny. So look him up. I'm not going to describe it to you, but he's appeared in a lot of comedy. Me and my wife used to love watching him on Veep. I mean, we would laugh out loud everything he did on Veep. But the other star of Detroit is who I want to talk about, Tim Robinson. This dude has a show on Netflix. Go look it up. It's a sketch comedy show called I Think You Should Leave. I love sketch comedy. I love comedy. I love SNL. I love laughing. I'll watch most sketch comedy except for Kids in the Hall, apparently. But I think, oh, I love Mr. Show on HBO. How good was Mr. Show? Boy, Bob Odenkirk, that was great. But I think quietly, my favorite sketch comedy show of all time might be I Think You Should Leave on Netflix. I think it only lasts like 2 or 3 seasons. Please go look it up. It is so fucking bizarre and original and fun. I don't know. I like it. Want some more comedy gold brought to you by Lorne Michaels? How about Portlandia? Yes, Lorne also produces that. That went from 2011, 2018, 79 episodes. Of course, Fred Armisen and Carrie Brownstein. I like this show as well. Portlandia is a good one. You want more? How about Documentary Now? How about that? I mean, I'm throwing comedy at you. This motherfucker's got his hands in all of it. So Documentary Now. I'll read the synopsis. Documentary Now parodies the current obsession with documentaries. Season 1 features 6 different stories and stylistic approaches paying tribute to the documentary format. I've seen most of these. It's great. So it's Fred. It's Bill Hader, produced by Seth Meyers as well. Helen Mirren has appeared. Lots of great actors have appeared. Paula Pell. She's Alexander Skarsgård. Cate Blanchett. Owen Wilson. I mean, you got to look this up. Nicholas Braun from Succession. Ooh. Go watch Succession. I love that show. Anyway, so that's Documentary Now. I found a 2020 movie that Lauren produced that I never heard of. I just like the title, and it's called Vampires versus the Bronx. I told you the Bronx would come back. But this movie's called Vampires versus the Bronx. I don't know anything about it, but I do know this. I'm from the Bronx. The Bronx would fucking win. I can promise you that. Vampires ain't got shit on the Bronx. And that about wraps up Lauren Michaels. But check this out. As of this recording, he's got 24 upcoming projects on his producer IMDb page. 24 upcoming projects. So maybe we'll do a part 2 someday. Because Lorne Michaels, he's going to live longer. He's going to produce more stuff. His legacy will never end. So let's just do this. Thank you, Lorne Michaels. Thank you for the laughs, the comedy. Thank you for changing television in the 70s. Thank you for making the late 80s and early 90s so much fun for me. Thank you for being there after 9/11 and helping to New York and America laugh again. I look forward to the stuff you produce going forward. You are a legend, sir. So congratulations. So that has been S3E8. If you like the show, you know what to do. Hit me up on Twitter at FanCheckPodcast. You can also email me, FanCheckPodcast@gmail.com. I'm giving out stickers. I ordered more. You got an email if you want one. I should start reading more emails too, but I get some weird ones, man. But I'll do that. Also, I'm on Facebook. That's where I do most of my connecting with people. Hit me up, Real Fanacek. Invite me to be your friend. I'd love to be your friend. You can also just direct message me on that. That's what a lot of people seem to do. I want to say thank you to the listeners. I always love having you. And I need you to do me a favor. Stay tuned for the next exciting episode of Fanacek.